You say you have no money, yet you have an enormous flat-screen television. Why on earth don't you sell your enormous flat-screen television and then use that off which to live? You are a parasite off society. Well, I'd be funny enough in right, but I ain't going to deprive my kids for no one. I'm going to deprive my kids for no one. Everyone has to have a television, right? At the end of the day, I'm going to deprive my kids for no one. Yes, but you are living off other people's money. You are living off other people's money when you've got enough money to buy an enormous flat screen television. Surely this is completely unacceptable. Have you no shame? As I say, you are a parasite of society. No, I ain't having that. I'm going to deprive my kids for no one, not for no one. Hello, and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now, what I was basically repeating part of, was an interview which happened on Newsnight in something like 1996 or 1995. And there was a female barrister who used the exact phrase, "You are parasites of society." And then on the show with her was a single mother that simply lived off benefits. And there was a whole moral panic at the time in the mid-90s about single mothers, about, as it were, members of the underclass who simply lived off the society. And this was considered to be a very terrible thing. Now, since then, we have a situation where 25% of people living in the UK are on some kind of benefit, and therefore in some way can be said to be parasites of society. And no one seems to want to accept the full implications of why this is happening. And there's been a recent, there was an article yesterday on Channel 4 News about how working class white boys are doing very badly and how terrible it is and how we should all feel guilty about it. And that is what I want to look at today, because actually they are gaslighting us. They are lying to us. They are trying to make us feel like yet more money must be expropriated from those who earn money and given to the working class people in order to assist them. Whereas in reality, they are not talking about working class people at all. They have redefined the word working class to effectively mean underclass. And there is now an enormous underclass. But that is surely not the same as the working class. So that's what I want to look at today. Before I do that, could you possibly do me a favour? Could you please subscribe? Could you subscribe on YouTube? Could you hit the like button, hit the bell button, leave a comment for the algorithm? I don't like the black background. Good. A comment for the algorithm and all that sort of thing. And could you subscribe on my Substack? That's jollyheretic.com, where I put all the most base stuff I can't put on YouTube, in-person interviews, vlogs, films I make. I've got a new film about Stamford, the home of British fascism, and where, if you like what I do, you can support me for the cost of a pint of beer a month. Okay, now let's go into this. So let's have a look at this article. And it's entitled, "The Working Class Children Struggling to Find Their Way in the World. White working class pupils have been the lowest attaining major ethnic group at GCSE level for more than a decade. Jackie Long examines why the system is holding them back." It's a cold evening, apparently, in East Marsh in Grimsby, and the Shalom Youth Centre is busy. There are noisy groups of young boys in the almost regulation black puffer jackets, the girls sitting in circles chatting and singing. In his 80s, Canon John Ellis, who is the local vicar, doesn't look out of place, moves among them. They respect him. He's run this youth group for a long time. It's a fantastic community, he says. This is for working class kids. Why working class kids don't make it in education, especially boys, it's not rocket science, he says. No, it's not rocket science, but that's the problem. He's not actually dealing with the working class. It may not be rocket science, but it is complicated. The very definition of white working class as a group has been contested over the past decade. What is the relevance of whiteness? Why do you define working? How do you define working class? Yet it's become an increasingly significant part of political debate in recent years. The Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, says it shouldn't be controversial to say we need to do better by white working class children. It's obvious. According to Education Social Media Charity Sutton Trust, white working class pupils have the lowest attainment of major ethnic group at GCSE level for over a decade. Now, I mean, we'll look at that in a minute, but let's understand what they're defining here. It's an ethnic group. An ethnic group. Right. What does this mean? Government data from 2024-25 indicates that just 19% of white British pupils on free school meals, achieved 5+ English and maths at GCSE. Right. Suddenly, we see what they're doing. Suddenly, they are defining working class, and they are defining working class in an extraordinary and self-serving and ludicrous way. How do we normally define social class? Well, there's a book by Michael Argyle called something like this, on social class, in which he looks at this. Normally, by the upper class, we mean those that are leaders in different spheres of life, leaders in the law, leaders in judiciary, leaders in every sphere of life, highly influential people. And of course, the traditional aristocracy that don't have to work and just live off investments. Then you have the upper middle class. This is normally the higher professionals. People like barristers, doctors, architects, academics, those kinds of people. The lower professionals will be people such as the middle class, as it were, people like teachers and nurses and office managers and that sort of thing. Then you have the lower middle class. That's the average sort of office worker, a policeman, a fireman. And perhaps they merge over into the higher end of the working class, the skilled working class, perhaps. But some of these would be considered to be lower middle class. Plumbers, electricians, car mechanics, skilled people that work with their hands. Then you have unskilled labourers, that sort of thing. That would be the lower end of the working class. And that is normally what is understood to be the working class. But the point is that you work. The point is that you work. You are contributing to society in your capacity as a worker, but the work that you do is physical in nature. I suppose you could argue that a standard hairdresser is a skilled member of the working class. A person that runs their own hairdressing business is lower middle class or whatever. It's the borders aren't exactly clear, but it's something like that. Then beneath that, argues Argyle, you have the underclass. And the underclass is those that are long-term benefit recipients. Now, look at how they're defining what they're doing. First of all, they are defining the white working class as an ethnic group. So they're saying, well, why is it that the white working class, according to their definition, don't do as well in their GCSEs as other ethnic groups? Well, that's absurd. The ethnic group is the English people. The English are an ethnic group. And rather like the Victorians, who used to argue that the white working, the working class, they used to argue, well, are they even white people? Some of them used to argue this. Are they actually proper English people? It's going back to that idea. They're separating them off as a distinct ethnic group, which I suppose has some truth in it, in that you can argue that people do social classes, people will assort according to highly genetic traits, such as intelligence, such as personality. And intelligence and personality, and they will marry people that are of similar intelligence and personality profiles to themselves, and they will therefore have children that are more genetically similar to themselves and indirectly pass on more of their genes. And you could argue, therefore, that social classes, are genetically distinct. And there is some good evidence for that. And there was a study that was published in 1983, which found that the different social classes in England have slightly different blood types on average. So they are genetically distinct. They are on their way to becoming ethnic groups. But it's not quite the case. Now, if you look at what it is that is associated with socioeconomic status, it is two key things. It is intelligence, which is about 80% genetic, according to twin studies and twin adoption studies. And it is personality, which is about 50% genetic. And in particular, the trait of conscientiousness, which is rule following, impulse control, that sort of thing. And to a lesser extent, agreeableness, which is how altruistic you are, therefore kind of how humble you are, and mental stability. And what has been shown, and there are a number of studies to back this up, is that the people that are middle class are high in intelligence and high in pro-social personality. The people that are upper class are higher intelligence, and this is balanced with moderately antisocial personality, and this makes them Machiavellian and narcissistic and cutting edge, and means that they rise all the way to the top. Because there's a degree to which, you know, being nice only gets you so far. To get to the real top, you've got to be a bit like a genius. You've got to combine very high intelligence with moderately antisocial traits so that you have original ideas, or so that you really want to fight and get there, and so you're slightly antisocial. And then the working class, on average, are low in intelligence compared to the others, and low in these pro-social traits. So in a sense, they're in some respects more like the upper class, at least in terms of their personality profile. This is really, really important. So what this, and these traits are genetic, and so what you have then are these genetic castes. Now, what happened over a very long time is that nepotism and so forth develops, and people, and so you get a situation where you have different social classes, and by genetic chance, sometimes a highly intelligent person or might be born into the working class. This could occur, but they will be held back. They might have the intelligence to be a lawyer, but what they'll go down the mine and they'll end up being the foreman. Or they'll end up being in charge of their local trade union or something like that. They will be, as it were, underpromoted. Now, there was a period of time, I suppose, from a bit before World War II onwards, where you had the introduction of deliberately egalitarian policies, the introduction of the grammar schools, the introduction of free higher education at the point of delivery, that sort of thing. And it was at that point that you had a huge shift. Like, every opportunity was given to working class people in a way that it previously hadn't been, to ensure that if you were born working class and you had the intelligence to be a lawyer, you would actually be able to potentially become a lawyer. Now, obviously, I cannot emphasize enough that it wasn't perfect. Of course, there wasn't absolute equality of opportunity. Of course, there was still nepotism. Of course, there was still bias. Of course, there was still prejudice against the working class. But that was the case. That those policies were there. And so what that meant was there was, in a couple of generations, a very substantial and obvious movement upwards of lots of people who were, by genetic chance or whatever, intelligent and of pro-social personality traits. And those people moved directly out of the working class or the lower middle class, in some cases into the upper middle and indeed upper class. You see this shift. And this is happening at the same time, of course, that because there's a negative association between intelligence and how many children you have, in which those that are in the upper class are kind of boiling off and not passing on their genes. So they're just kind of dying off. And so you see this process where a number of prime ministers all in a row, Harold Wilson, Edward Heath, James Callaghan, Margaret Thatcher, John Major, are all of them in a row. Every prime minister before that has been, for God knows how long, back to Disraeli or something, has been to a public school. But then suddenly they've all been to state schools, they've all been to state grammar schools, and their backgrounds are middle, at best middle. I think Harold Wilson's parents were school teachers. Lower middle, Edward Heath's father was a carpenter. Down into sort of, is that the higher working class, as I say, unclear. Margaret Thatcher's father was a grocer. Jim Callaghan's father was, I think, some kind of fisherman or something. And then finally, John Major's father made garden gnomes. So, and was a circus clown. So, and then with Tony Blair, it then reasserts itself, and we've had substantially privately educated prime ministers ever since. So there was a period of time where there was this movement. Now, what did that do? It would have been the case that the different social classes before this change happened were relatively similar in intelligence, and not completely, but relatively similar in intelligence and relatively similar in their kind of personality. It would all have been kind of mixed in, and nepotism to some extent would have kept things in place. And indeed, there's a study called The Sun Also Rises, which looks at surnames, and surnames are a marker of social class. There are high status surnames, which are like the names of a manor, and you're called that because your ancestor in medieval times, when surnames became hereditary, was the lord of the manor or something like that. And there are middle ranking surnames, middle ranking jobs, and there are low status surnames like shepherd or whatever. And even now, those high ranking surnames, so-called locative surnames, are overrepresented in degrees from prestigious universities and in prestigious professions. And the low status surnames are underrepresented. And what this study showed is that from the medieval period up into 1950, the heritability, to a certain extent, not completely, the genetic component of socioeconomic status was 0.75. From the medieval period, every generation, you would get people like Thomas Cromwell or whatever that were born into the lower classes or the lower middle classes by random chance. And if they were intelligent and so forth, nothing could hold them back and they would tend to move up. Now, what this process has done is it has created cognitive stratification. It has sucked out of the working class a lot of the intelligent people that were once there. And that's important because you can what it does to society, because you can imagine a postal sorting office in 1950 and something going wrong. And there'd be somebody there that was born working class, but that was highly intelligent. And he was working in the postal sorting office, perhaps as the foreman, and something would go wrong, and he'd be able to solve the problem of what had gone wrong, and then that thing wouldn't go that wrong, and then everything would be okay. Now that person is not there. That person or his equivalent is now a lawyer or a doctor or whatever, or a school teacher or a lecturer, whatever, but something else, something higher. And so you have nobody particularly intelligent working in the postal sorting office. Possibly there's immigrants, because intelligence is associated with migration, but probably not. And therefore things go wrong. It's kind of bad for society. It's fairer, but it's bad for society. So this has sucked out all of the intelligent people from the working class, and the nature of those that are working class can be expected on average to be less intelligent than it was. Now, a number of things interfere with our class system. Most obviously, there's this fascinating situation where people doing what you would surely call working class jobs, train drivers, tube drivers, plumbers, now earn considerably more money. Their jobs are obviously not prestigious. Their social status is not particularly high, but their economic status can be considerably higher than people that go to very posh universities and then go into being a university lecturer or whatever it happens to be. So you have this weird situation where people whom you would regard as working class earn more money and have a better standard of living than people whom you would regard as upper class, upper middle class. And there's an interesting something in human nature is quite interesting. We will, to a certain extent, trade money for status. We regard status as more important than money. And this is a weird evolutionary mismatch because status and resources used to be strongly correlated. And for various reasons, sort of decadence, really, this is no longer the case. And so you will get these people that will go and do a degree at a posh university and a master's degree and a PhD and even take out a loan to do a PhD because their PhD is on such a pointless subject that no one's prepared to fund their PhD. And then they'll be earning, average salary or something, whereas someone that's a train driver that never went to university is earning a double or triple what they earn. So you can see how the social class thing gets, it's a bit complicated of who is working class. But going back to that article, on Channel 4, what they are defining working class as is that you are on free school meals. Now, who is on free school meals? The answer is not the working class. The answer is the people who don't work. That is who is on free school meals. So it's the underclass. So what they're actually asking is, why is it that the underclass of the white underclass of Grimsby have poorer GCSE results than Asians, than blacks, than whatever? And the answer is perfectly simple, that there are the whole range, or to some extent, the whole range of social classes among different ethnic groups within the UK. And social class, remember, is associated with intelligence and pro-social personality. And how, which are genetic, partly. And how well you do in your GCSEs correlates at 0.7. GCSEs, for any American viewers, is your school leaving certificates at the age of 16, where you do about 10 different subjects and you have to do English, maths and science. 0.7 with your intelligence. So to a certain extent, although not completely, your GCSE results are a reflection of how intelligent you are, which is strongly genetic. And we have seen a genetic process over the last roughly 100 years, which has ensured that intelligence is not even remotely equally distributed across the society, that those that are working class, or certainly those that are underclass, are therefore likely to have extremely low intelligence. And where every generation, somebody that is anyway reasonably intelligent and becomes educated in somewhere like Grimsby is likely to leave and go to a university town or go to London or whatever. And so you're not comparing like with like. To compare like with like would be to compare white people with South Asian people in the UK and see who does better at GCSE. You're not doing that. You're comparing a particular low IQ subgroup of white people, the underclass, and you're asking why don't they do very well in their GCSEs? And the answer is obvious. It's because they have low intelligence. And you're literally defining working class in this sense as being on free school meals, which, of course, what it means is that you're part of the underclass. Your parents don't work, and therefore you are entitled, or they earn a very low salary. And therefore, of course, you're going to do badly in your GCSEs. But it's very interesting and telling in the language that they define working class as an ethnic group. I wonder if they realized that they were doing that when they wrote it. I wonder if they even thought about it as an ethnic group. As though the English are not, as though they are separate ethnic, they are separate ethnic group. And they are comparable to South Asians in the UK or blacks in the UK. But of course they're going to do badly. The reason that they are on free school meals is because they are the underclass. They are the underclass. They outperformed by all other ethnic groups, including Chinese students on free school meals. Now, who are these going to be? These are probably going to be people that have come from China and aren't earning much because they're new to the country. But they're probably highly intelligent, but they're new to the country, so they're poor, and then they become better off in the next generation. So again, that's one of the things that happens with migration. You go through a generation of being poor when you're new, with the hope of better things for your offspring. So that's, again, no argument, really. And then they interview people. I've got the picture in front of me of a man. Of course, he's smoking, and he's covered. His arms are covered in tattoos, which is associated with low intelligence. He's a fisherman, but the younger generation would, of course, leave somewhere like that. And then they're saying, "Oh, what can we do? We need to instill a love of learning in members of the underclass." Well, how likely are you to be able to do that? Now, there are going to be some people, it should be emphasized, who will be born just by a genetic chance or whatever into the underclass that will then be intelligent and will move out. I can't stress that enough. But in general, that's not going to be the case. So it's like they're gaslighting us. It's like they're saying, well, look, we should feel really, really bad about this, that the working class are doing so badly in the UK. It's so terrible. It's so unfair. But it's not, because they're not even talking about the working class. They're talking about the underclass. And the heritability of intelligence is high, and being in the underclass is associated with very low intelligence. And so, of course, they're going to do badly in the GCSEs. It's as simple as that. It's for genetic reasons. But they don't want to talk about that. They just want to kind of vaguely guilt trip people and not talk about ethnics for a change, but instead talk about the white underclass, which they won't even call the white underclass. That the euphemism for the underclass is now working class, which I think is an insult to actual hardworking and industrious people who are working class, like car mechanics or whatever, that have that, I suppose that's the upper working class or the lower middle class, that have a business and are doing well. I think it's absolute insult to them. So I suppose that we are now so wealthy as a society, perhaps that's it, perhaps that's the takeaway. We are now so wealthy as a society, and standards of living are so high, even though we talk about the cost of living crisis, that we are now defining working class as underclass. That's what Channel 4 is saying. And indeed, we are defining underclass as a separate ethnic group. In the same way that we, at the bottom of the working class, and there's a, I think this is looked at in a book called Farewell to Arms, you used to have the gypsies. And it's argued that the gypsies are partially ethnically foreign and partially reflect the way in which the lowest component of the English working class would drop down into the gypsy class and marry with them, the so-called gorgers, as I believe gypsies call those who are non-gypsy, gorgers, and intermarry with them. And so you end up with a group that is a mixture genetically of gypsy and of English. And that they would do things like make brooms and fix pots and be involved in the selling of horses and that sort of thing. But no, they are now defining those that live on benefits as the working class, even though they are, of course, not working. So they are gaslighting us about problems with the working class. They are suggesting there are problems with working class people that do not exist. And they are trying to provide that underclass with an ethnic identity, perhaps such that it will help them in a society obsessed with foreign ethnic groups. I don't know. Are we now going to say that the underclass are a different ethnic group? Because if so, that's a fascinating possibility. Well, I hope this has been of interest. If it has, will you please, as I said, subscribe on here and subscribe on Substack. Will you please just share the video online? And if you have any comments on your own experiences of these class differences and so forth, then I'm very interested to read them. And I will see you all soon, chaps. And goodbye.